This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Massage Envy, the only podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball. Now here's Matt Jones.
Today on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, Arkansas coach Dave Van Horn joins me for a wide-ranging discussion. We talk about having multiple former players in the World Series, his thoughts on Arkansas's fall baseball season, and much more. That conversation with Coach Van Horn is coming up, but first, a word from our sponsor.
Massage Envy has been voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. Great therapists and estheticians go along with a new service that I am truly excited about. Rapid Tension Relief uses a special tool that will melt the tension and soreness away. Trust me, you will not be disappointed in the results. I highly recommend this feature along with a total body stretch assisted stretch program. Whether you are competing at a high level or just want to relax, these services are for everyone. Massage, rapid tension relief, total body stretch, deep muscle treatment massage, you choose. Or you can try any combination of those. So the next time you're feeling tight, make sure to call my friends at Massage Envy.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Massage Envy.
Coach, we appreciate you taking time today.
Oh, not a problem. Always excited to talk a little baseball.
So the World Series ended this week. I think in Game 5, at one point there were three consecutive half innings where you had Ryan Stanek and Drew Smyly pitching. Have you ever had a moment like that in the World Series where you've had two players going against each other?
Well, just one, and I actually got to go to one of the games when the Astros were playing the Dodgers a few years back, and we had Dallas Keuchel and Logan Forsythe going at it. And I remember, and I think it was the first inning, Logan had a great at-bat, fouled off some pitches, took some borderline pitches, and then I think he singled the left. And they got Keuchel's pitch count up a lot. That was down in Houston. Obviously, the Dodgers ended up, I think, losing that series. So, but it was maybe they won. I don't remember. It's too many years ago. But I'll tell you, it's always exciting when you have the opportunity at the end of the year to see some of your former players on such a big stage.
What do you think about Drew Smyly and getting to win a World Series with everything that he's been through, the Tommy John surgery? Seems like he's really overcome a lot.
He has. You know, I text Drew Wright after they, you know, they clinched an opportunity to play in the World Series. And I sent a text out to Ryan Stanek as well. You know, it's hard for me to – people would ask me, who do you want to win? I'd say nobody or both of them. But it was, you know, after Drew and them won it that night, I sent him a text, and he actually responded to it yesterday, the day after. It was really good to hear. He just says – just excited for him and his family. I think his comment was along the line of, I can't believe we're world champions. And I just told him, hey, enjoy it. You deserve it. And just really proud of him and happy for him.
You were drafted by the Braves. You played what, 2-3 minor league seasons in that organization. Is there any fandom that comes along with having been a part of that organization?
Just a little bit. I had a couple of my former teammates back then with the Braves that, you know, I stay in touch with a little bit, and a couple of guys sent me texts, you know, just about, you know, Brian Snitker, the manager, I actually played for him for four games. One year, my second year, I got promoted to Durham. He was always one year ahead of me. I think his first year managing, he went to the Anderson Braves, and I was with the Pulaski Braves. My second year, I was with the Anderson Braves. He moved to the Durham Bulls. And then towards the end of the year, I got to go to Durham really for the last week. It was four or five ball games, and then that was that. So it was kind of neat. Happy for him. I mean, he's a lifer, and I knew him when he was young, a young manager. So there was a little bit extra there, yeah, I would say, with the Braves.
Did you play with any guys who went on to be big leaguers in that organization?
Oh, yeah, a bunch of them. I mean, I can't remember them all, but I played with Andres Thomas. He was a shortstop. I played second with him. He was younger than me, really talented. Mark Lemke, we played the same position. You know, I played on the same team with him my last year, and It's really interesting dynamics because I was older, he was younger, he was better. I mean, I could go on. And I kind of mentored him a little bit, to be honest with you, because he struggled and I could see the talent in him. And I think I was already starting to coach and I didn't realize it. I told him he was going to play in the big leagues. And he even asked me one time, do you think I made the right decision signing out of high school? Because he was very intelligent. He had a scholarship to Princeton and a couple others. I think it was from Utica, New York. And kind of cool conversation between him and I about, I thought how talented he was and how good he was going to be. And he was just young. And I remember his dad found me about a week later and told me that he appreciated me talking to his son about some of those things. So, and there were more, there were some pitchers and some guys that were in and out. So yeah, I played with a few guys.
Your last minor league season, I think was 84. How long after you finished playing baseball did you come back and start your graduate assistantship for Norm?
Pretty much immediately. You know, when I was released that summer, you know, that fall, I almost came back to Arkansas in the fall of 84, talked to Norm a lot about coaching, but I wanted to take a few classes and I wanted to work honestly and make some money and save some money. And that's what I did from really August all the way through the Christmas break. And then I came, my first time to be on campus and coach was the spring of 85, which was a really good year. We went to Omaha. Norm let me really get involved. He basically turned the infielders over to me. Back then, the graduate assistants could go on the road recruiting, and they trusted me enough to put some cash in my hand and say, hey, go find this guy. Basically, you paid for gas and you got to eat. And I was a part of a really good team and I was hooked. I knew I was going to be a college coach.
If you hadn't have come back to Fayetteville and been a GA at that point, was there another career path that you were considering? What would you have done if you hadn't have become a baseball coach then?
You know, it's that's a good question. You know, my dad was at the time was running a plumbing company and I worked for him, but I did most of what I called the hard work, the labor work. I dug holes and trench lines and you know, that was a business that he wanted me to take over, but I knew that that was not going to be my calling. I think I learned a little bit about discipline and hard work and the value of a dollar, those type of things, but something I was going to do the rest of my life. I knew I was going to be in baseball. I had a couple of people approach me about scouting. I just think I was destined to be in baseball some way. So who's to say? I mean, some people will say, yeah, if I didn't do this, I was going to, you know, join the military or go do this or that. I knew that I was going to coach. I just needed a little bit of time to process the fact that I was done playing because I loved playing. And then, you know, a couple months into my first coaching stint, so to speak, at Arkansas, I knew that that's what I was going to do.
I hear opposing coaches and players, you know, talk about your team's blue collar approach. And you know, I even talked to a player, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years ago who mentioned that they saw you after a rain delay, you're sweeping out the dugout. You feel like that approach that you have, that blue collar, you know, I mean, does that come from those jobs that you had leading up to being a baseball coach?
I think a little bit. You know, I think that whatever you're doing, no matter if you're a volunteer or the head coach, you're not too good to pick up a rake and rake the field or sweep a dugout, pick up some trash on the field. If you walk by it, you shouldn't just leave it. And I want the players to see that. And it's not phony for me. It's just the way I feel. I guess it's just the way I was brought up a little bit. And I think that players can appreciate that I'm not too good for anything. It's just, you know, 40 guys working together, coaches, players, managers, all the way down to the last man on the totem pole. It takes everybody. And you know, it's been a formula that's worked.
I would have to imagine in your early jobs, say like at Texarkana, I mean, you're having to do all of that because there's nobody else to do it.
Oh yeah. My first year and a half at Texarkana, I was the only coach by myself. And I took that job at Christmas time. So that first spring I did everything. The second year, I think I had a couple of guys come in and help me for a week or two and realized that you know, hey, I'm not getting paid. This is taking too much time. This is too serious. I didn't really want to do it. Whatever, you know, local guys. I drug the field. I even bought a little ride mower because I didn't like the way that we played at a city park, and I didn't like the way they took care of the field. I think I upset them a little bit, but to me, it was worth the $1,100 at the time, which was a lot of money for us. I mean, my wife, Karen, was like, what are you doing? You know, we rye grassed. I remember we went and bought the seed to put it out because we wanted it to look better for our team, for players. And I'd even dragged the field before we got the ride mower with my truck. You know, I had a smaller truck, and we just took the drag up to the trailer hitch. I mean, we got lots of good stories. But you know what? It makes you just appreciate it. You know, you're a young guy. You're 28, 29, 30 years old, and you're trying to do everything you can to win and advance. And that's where I was at the time.
I'm going to ask you about your team here in just a second. I want to ask you one more thing, though, before we get into that. Lance Harder announced that he's retiring this week. I know that, you know, you guys share that facility with the track team, that there's a lot of, you know, crossover between you coaches. What are your thoughts about him retiring and just the success that he's had?
You know, I think Lance is around 70 years old. He looks great. He's in good shape. He's had about as much success as anybody's ever had in any college sport. You know, if you're just talking about championships and winning percentage, and I mean, he doesn't have anything else to prove. And you know, I'm happy that he's getting to go out when he wants to go out. Those guys work, their teams work, and you know, we've gotten to we talk a little bit here and there in passing, and about what's been going on that week or what's coming up. And he sent me some really nice text after, you know, especially this year, or just about any time we win, and how hard it is to win. A lot of people don't realize that. And, you know, what he's done with that program is special. And, you know, happy that, you know, he gets to think about it and kind of go through, this is the last time I'm going to do this, last time I'm going to do that over the next 18 months.
I can't remember where I heard Eric Musselman talk about this, but within the last year or so, I heard him talk about, you know, he likes to go to other teams' practices, or, you know, whenever he goes to, say, a track meet or a baseball game, he's observing the head coaches and what they're doing. Do you ever do that when you go to other games or other teams' practices? Are you watching what other coaches do and maybe taking notes, any things that maybe you can implement into your baseball program?
I think that any coach just naturally is going to do that. You're going to watch kind of the way that everything's moving or flowing, or, you know, how the head coach is managing his team. Is he, you know, is there a lot of hands-on, or is there a lot of just observing? And obviously it depends on the time of the week, the time of the season for these coaches. You know, I know it's that way in baseball, and because we play so many games, that you've got to pace the team, you've got to pace the practices, you've got to really watch how you get after the guys, because if it's so much all the time, it's going to backfire on you. There's many a time as a coach that I'm thinking, man, I should get after him right here, and I'm thinking in my head, but I just did that last week, or I did that yesterday, and you're thinking, you know, they're going to let it roll off if it doesn't mean as much, if you don't spread it out a little bit. But it's interesting dynamics. I do tune in to other coaches and their demeanor when it's going well, the demeanor when it's going bad, the body language, because I think everyone's watching, and they need, you got to try to stay even keeled as best you can, except every now and then when you really feel like that you need to get after somebody to motivate a team. And you know, I think that the good coaches will tune into that a lot.
Now, Lance is going to transition the program over to one of his assistant coaches, Chris Johnson. You just signed a 10-year extension. I know retirement's probably far off thought for you, but whenever that time comes, do you hope that you can do something like that, transition it to someone who's been a part of the program?
Well, I'd hope so. You know, it'd probably be maybe a year out. You know, you'd say something like, hey, this can be my last year, because you don't want to – as a coach, honestly, you don't want it to be all about you. You want it to be about the team and the season. You want to make it a big deal. You know, with me, and I haven't really thought about it that much, but you bring it up, it might even be the situation after the season's over, I just do it, because that way it's about the team all year, and it's not, you know, Coach Van Horn's going to retire at the end of the year. We got to do this. I don't want the players to feel any pressure. Obviously, I would hope that I would have a hand in at least helping who they're going to select to be the next coach. But, you know, this is probably the most I've ever talked about it, and I probably won't talk about it again too much because I don't plan on retiring right now. I feel great. If there's other issues or health issues, you know, something happens there, I get it. Or, you know, if I just feel, and I've said this many times, I don't feel like I'm, you know, the guy for the job, then I'll move aside because I care too much about this program.
When you came back to Arkansas, it was kind of a similar situation. I know you weren't on Norm's staff at that time, but you had been an assistant coach here. Did you feel like it helped that first team that you have to have a transition from Norm to yourself, and maybe the two coaches have similar ideals, philosophies, things of that nature?
Oh, yeah. I truly believe that it was a lot easier for maybe Norm, who had been in the program for like 33 years, to not feel like that it was just when he walked out the door, he couldn't walk back in and kind of wean himself off of it. Cause it's hard, you know, it's a way of life. It's not just a job. It's what you do. It's, you know, it's like I said, it's a way of going about every day, a way of life. And when I came in, I made sure that Norm felt comfortable coming around, talking. I would call Norm and talk to him about some of the players that were on the team and maybe their personalities, or tell him what had happened with this particular player and get his opinion about his makeup or was I reading this wrong or whatever. And then obviously I never badmouthed Norm or badmouthed, you know, that it didn't go great or whatever. Cause you know, a lot of times coaches do that when they come in, and I always tell my coaches that go off and get other jobs, what you need to do is go in there and keep your head down. Don't badmouth the kids that are in the program. Don't badmouth the coach that just left, even if they left because it didn't go good the last 4 or 5 years. You just be positive. And, but I think Norm felt really comfortable when I came in, as far as coming back around and I think it was a smooth transition for the kids.
Massage Envy, with clinics in Rogers and Fayetteville, has been awarded Northwest Arkansas's Best Day Spa and Best Massage. One of the reasons is our care for athletes, both serious and recreational. We now offer rapid tension relief sessions using a high-caliber vibrating tool and total body stretch sessions like the ones used by the PGA. Both of these new services can be combined with the always popular deep muscle treatment. So whether you compete or just want to relax, there is no place better than Massage Envy.
All right, let's talk about this year's team. You just got done with fall practice. I know you just finished your exit interviews with the players. What did you learn about your team this fall over the last couple of months?
Man, I learned a lot about the team. Number one is just about the what we need to work on, what we're good at, what needs to happen between now and February as far as the little things. There's always the issues of camaraderie and coming together as a team. You know, fall baseball it's broke up into really the pitchers with the pitching coaches and help, and the position players with the hitting guy and the defensive coaches. And then we scrimmage, not a lot of team defense. That's the way we run our program. As far as, what do I mean by that? You know, bunk coverages, first and third defense, a little here, a little there, but we do all of that in January, you know, for a month straight, you're inside a lot. That's what we do. And we get good at it. But just figuring out what we need to work on. I did learn that, and I knew it going in, that it'd be a lot of competition to get on the field as far as position players. And, you know, when you sit down and you try to write a lineup with all the positions in a DH, there's going to be a couple, three good players that aren't going to get in that lineup every day. And for me personally, it's hard, but at the same time, it's the problem that you want. If somebody's struggling, we'll be able to fill in. If somebody's injured, it's not going to devastate our lineup. And we're going to be able to swing the bats. As far as pitching, you know, you start to see, really, it's fall is about the young players on the mound and the young players in the field. We need to see those guys, see how they can adjust to this type of pitching, this speed of this game, Some guys struggle. Some guys get better as fall goes on. Some guys don't do well at all fall. And then you're, as a coach, you're wondering, what do we do here? Do we recruit over this kid's head for the future? And that's why I have meetings with guys to find out how they're feeling. So there's a lot that goes into fall baseball. You don't want guys to get hurt. Sometimes the best day in fall ball is when we get off the field as a team, for me as a coach, because we know where we're at injury-wise, who's got to get healthy, and you just don't want to lose one of your top players at the end of fall.
You mentioned those young pitchers. The velocities are really high, it seems like, for the freshmen who are coming in, but I know you say there's more to pitching than velocity, and obviously there is. And it seems to me like there's a lot of younger pitchers now who are coming in with better secondary pitches. Are you seeing that?
Well, to pitch at this level or any level from high school on, you know, in high school you can get some pretty good hitters out in high school with just a fastball if you can locate it. But you've got to have a great secondary pitch. You've got to have a slider or a plus changeup. And you have to be able to pitch when you're behind the count and use that pitch. Example, a 2-0 fastball at our level is going to get hammered. A 3-1 fastball is going to get hit pretty hard, you know, a lot of times. Now, if you got a plus fastball, go after them, challenge the guys. But you're going to see at this level on up, you're going to see 3-1 sliders, 2-0 changeups, and you can get some swings and misses, some pop-ups, weak contact. But you're right. You know, these young guys, that if they want to pitch now, they've got to have something to get out good hitters when they're behind in the count. And we've got some guys that do that. But, yeah, I guess to answer your question, I think we look for that. We obviously, you like a guy to throw 97 miles an hour, but what else does he have? Because we've seen this fall our pitchers that are behind that throw hard, if they don't have something else, we hit it hard.
I feel like everybody knows kind of who your position players are. You got so many of them back. Starting pitching is going to be something, you know, that people are always going to ask you about. Matt Hobbs talks about he wants to have at least six guys that he feels comfortable going into a season as a starting pitcher. If the preseason were starting right now, who are the pitchers you think you're evaluating as starters?
Well, I could probably name four that deserve it right now, maybe five, but, you know, maybe you want to leave one of the guys, in the pen. Hopefully, Peyton Paulette is 100% healthy and he's ready to go out and be a starter. I feel like Connor Nolan had a tremendous fall. I mean, last year at this time, Connor was struggling and was ranked way down by the players and in our mind, because he got hit around. I mean, it was 360. He got himself in great shape. He threw the ball down in the zone, had some quick innings, struck out a lot of hitters. I mean, he's done a really nice job there. You know, you could go with, you could throw a couple of freshmen in there. Maybe Hagen Smith, a left-hander, has got an opportunity to be a weekend starter. I don't know. You know, it's really almost week to week with some guys as far as, you know, who can go out there and grab a starting position. You got Jackson Wiggins, who's got a tremendous arm, and now he's throwing his slider and his changeup around the plate and looks a lot more polished. I mean, he's got a chance to be a conference starter. He didn't have a really good fall. He went out and played summer ball and did well with Team USA, but it was an inning here, an inning there. So now he's got to transition into throwing more innings, more pitches. And I think there's definitely a possibility there. I mean, you could go with Heston Toll. Heston had a tremendous fall until his last outing. It didn't go real well in the red-white game, one of the red-white games. But other than that, he was lights out. So there's a few more in there. Nick Moten's a straight-up freshman. But probably his average fastball was 95. He threw more than that, harder than that. But he threw a lot of strikes, got a lot of swings and misses. And, he showed that as a true freshman that he's kind of got what it takes to get hitters out at this level.
I would assume at the back end, you go back more to like what you had, you know, your traditional closers, guys like Matt Cronin and Kevin Copps is such a unicorn. I don't think you're ever going to have another pitcher like him again. Who are you looking at the back end? And do you see that being more of a traditional closer in 22, the guy that comes out, gets you 3-4, maybe 5 outs?
Could be. Again, you know, a guy like Moten, he threw one inning here, one inning there, a couple there, and he got after you. So we don't know if he's ready to go long yet or start. I think he will in the future, but he could be a guy, even as a true freshman, could go back there because his stuff is that good. Fills his position okay. You know, I mean, Evan Taylor had a big fall for us. You know, he kind of challenged him at the end of the spring last year after the season was over, felt like he should be more advanced in his career. He should be ready to help this team. Went out and had a pretty good summer. His stuff was good. He threw a lot of strikes. He's really hard to hit. He could be a guy that could finish a game for you. He can give you a couple innings. You know, if Hagan Smith wasn't a starter, he could close games. I mean, there's some other guys. Mark Adamiak, that was really hard. He could be a starter, closer. He had a good fall. I don't know if we're going to be able to lock into one or we're going to have two or three. I really believe with this team that we're going to score runs. Last year we played a bunch of 1- and 2-run games. I'm sure we'll play our share this year because everybody else will be good as well. But I do feel like that we'll have an opportunity to get some leads. There might be some guys that close and start in the 7th, 8th inning, you know, when we have X amount of run lead, 3-4, and then we might go with the guy that's, you know, shown to be the maybe the more consistent guy to get outs in an inning if we have a 1-run lead going into the 9th. But that's still to be determined, and I think early spring will determine that.
It feels like you guys hit it pretty good in the transfer portal this last year. It feels like, you know, Jace Borifin, Chris Lanzilli, Michael Turner, those are all types that have got a chance to play a lot for you.
They do. We're very fortunate that those guys decided to come here. Michael Turner had a tremendous fall. You know, he was at Kent State. He was, he was playing a little bit of infield, catching a little bit, had an injury last year, bad hamstring pull that really couldn't shake. And we're surprised that he didn't catch more. He's always, his track record has shown that he's a very good hitter at this level. And he just needed a change of scenery. And, you know, he can play first, he can play some third, he can catch, but he's going to swing the bat probably every day. And I don't know, Chris Lanzilli had a tremendous freshman year, pretty good, or really, a really good sophomore year. And then COVID hit, then last year. The last 2 weeks of fall ball, he hit the ball as hard as anybody, but wasn't rewarded too much. Plays a pretty solid left field. Made a couple of really nice plays in our red-white series, threw a couple runners out, made some nice catches. And then Jace Borifin, I mean, this is a young man that we recruited as hard as anybody for probably 2 to 3 years, decided to stay home. He's from the Oklahoma City area. And obviously when he told us he was going to stay home and play, we were nice to him. We were disappointed. We're always nice to kids. I mean, it's a tough decision. And when his name popped up in the portal, we jumped on it. And he seems to be really happy here. And, you know, first couple of weeks in, he was good. The last 3 or 4 weeks of fall ball, he was one of our best hitters, if not the best hitter. I think Coach Thompson, Coach Wernis have done a great job with him, made a few adjustments in his swing, flattened it out. He's hitting the ball with some impact but also staying in the strike zone, which I think we've done a lot better job as a team already this fall than we did last year. And it's an emphasis that we put on our offense this fall, and I think they're really paying attention.
I thought Braden Webb really stood out to me in the fall.
So Braden's a guy that, if you look at Braden, athletically, he's as good as anybody we've had in here. And we've had some good athletes. You're talking about throwing, accurate arm strength, running speed, running the bases, hit for power, outstanding running catch at defender. You know, he could have played center field with Franklin every step of the way last year and the year before. He's had some injuries, gotten off to a bad start, had some rough stints. But this fall, it seemed like he put it all together. I didn't even know if he was going to want to play again. And he told me from the day after we lost, I'm coming back and I'm playing. And I didn't know if he would because he's getting up there. And he's been a man on a mission. So if he could play center field for us, he makes us better all the way around. He had 6 or 7 home runs in the fall, led our team, hit over 300, stole bases, played great defense. Hopefully he'll take it to the spring.
I got a few rapid fire questions for you, Coach, before we get out. I'm just going to say a statement or ask a question. You just tell me what comes to your mind. What's your favorite baseball movie?
Oh yeah, that would probably be. Some people might not like that, but I enjoyed Bull Durham. At the time it came out, I had been there, I'd seen it, and then when it came out, I kind of got it.
You kind of relate with it. Outside of Baum Walker, favorite ballpark to coach in?
I'm going to go with the Texas Rangers ballpark. I love that park last year. As far as college, I don't really have one.
Okay. Am I right? You guys are going back to Arlington in 23?
Yes.
Okay. Favorite steakhouse in Omaha when you go up there?
Oh, shoot. I guess I'm going to have to – what is it called? The Drover?
The Drover. Yeah, that's everybody's favorite. Yeah. Have you ever watched a video of yourself being ejected on YouTube?
It's hard to watch. You know, sometimes you wish as a person or even a coach or whatever you do for a living, you can take some things back. And yeah, I have. I'm glad they changed the rules the way they did. So you only get one freebie a year. And then the second one you do, you have to start missing games. So, but really what's helped on those ejections to slow those down is something called a review.
Yeah.
I think those are huge. And at least we get a different opinion or a chance to think about it.
But before the reviews, did you ever go out there thinking you were going to get ejected when you left the dugout?
Oh, yeah. There was a few times that you go out, maybe once a year, your team's struggling. You can tell they're kind of just going through the motions in the dugout in a tight game. You're thinking, this isn't going to flip unless I get these guys' attention. And, you know, I can remember a couple of times it's worked, a couple of times it didn't make a difference. So, yeah.
What do you do during the off season before you come back? And I'm talking about you personally. What's your off season look like? Do you still do the pheasant hunt?
Yeah, you know, off season, a lot of people, they don't realize that we never slow down here until really the guys leave for Christmas break. Or right around finals. We're still working with these guys 4 days a week at a minimum. We usually give them Fridays off. Fridays mornings are, there is a lift in the morning, then they've got the rest of the weekend. So really 2.5 days to do whatever they want. Monday through Thursday, we're pretty heavy with them on hourly basis because there's a time limit, whether it's hitting, defense, pitching, fielding, whatever. We're getting after them. But for me, the off season is the time to recover, probably work out a lot more, just try to get strong for the season because it's such a grind. We usually take a pheasant hunting trip, and that's on the calendar again. And, you know, I jokingly say that my wife says I come back with a lot better attitude. So I'm sure I do need it. You need a little time away to just go do something else. And it's kind of fun.
Hey, last one. You've got 54 games on your 22 schedule. Do you plan to extend that out to 56?
Well, we've tried to. It's really hard to get teams to come here for midweek games once their conference start, or once it gets past maybe 10 days into March. They want to play at home. Mm-hmm. We have tried to get some games. It just really hasn't worked out. But we can always add them. If something happens, or we can turn a single game into a doubleheader if we can get some teams to do it. So we're still working on that, but right now that the schedule is 54, that's usually about what you end up playing because of rainouts or problems. But if something happens where we can get another game, we'll definitely do it.
Our thanks to Dave Van Horn for joining us today. For more on Razorback baseball, visit us at wholehogsports.com. We'll have plenty of coverage during the offseason leading up to the Razorbacks' start of preseason practice in January. We'll also be back with another Whole Hog Baseball podcast next week. Aaron Fitt of D1Baseball.com will join me to talk about his impressions of the Razorbacks during his trip to Fayetteville this fall. So be sure to be on the lookout for that. Until the next time, I'm Matt Jones saying thank you for joining us on the Whole Hog Baseball podcast.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.